Coming up on Tech News Today, Apple sells out but slips back in the tablet market. Also, Twitter fights back against the DMCA and Facebook accused of intentional sucking. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for the 5th of November, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients from anywhere. You can share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use promo code TNT. And by Lantronics, maker of the X Print Server. Print from your iPad, iPhone, or any iOS device to virtually any printer. For more information, visit xprintserver.com/twit and enter the coupon code TWIT to receive free shipping on your order. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphones. Find out what your gadget is worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest iPhone at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zachter.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, put them in context for you, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the newsfeed. Despite reports of shorter lines, Apple says it sold 3 million iPads, both minis and 10-inches, over the weekend, double what it sold on the first weekend of the new iPad that launched this past March. Of course, it had more models on sale this time. But new numbers from the IDC show tablets are following the history of smartphones as more Android-based devices appear. Apple's market share fell from 65.5% to 50.4%. Samsung rose to 18.4%. Amazon grabbed 9%. And Asus, with the Nexus 7, took 8.6%.
Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer says, "We're scrappy, but we're going to grow like a weed." That's actually me paraphrasing what he actually said. The quote was, "We're still relatively small. I expect the volumes on Windows Phone to ramp really quickly." This was at a meeting at a Windows 8 launch event in Israel earlier this morning, according to Reuters. Microsoft just launched Windows Phone 8 last week in San Francisco. Phone models like the Lumia 920, the HTC Windows Phone 8X are going to start becoming available. Ballmer also says that Windows Phone has an opportunity to create a really strong third participant in the smartphone world.
Twitter's got a new way to handle DMCA takedown notices. Instead of tweets vanishing from existence, Twitter says it will, quote, clearly mark withheld tweets and media to indicate to viewers when content has been withheld. Twitter says the move was done for transparency.
Remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder DDoS and hack.
I liked how you started
something
it.
Something along those lines. It's Guy Fawkes Day, which means those masks made popular by V for Vendetta and anonymous hackers are going to sell like hotcakes. The doxing and the hacking claims are pouring in fast and furious, targeting sites like PayPal, Symantec, and the Australian government, among many others. Just as fast are the counterclaims of who deserves credit for which hacks. Enjoy the bonfires, both on and off the internet.
Belkin's car charger for Lightning and Charge Plus Sync Dock are going on sale in mid-November. They'll be the first Lightning accessories to hit the market. The accessories are available for pre-order now on Belkin's website. The car charger will run you $29.99, and the Belkin Charge Plus Sync Dock is a case compatible with fold-away auxiliary jack, removable magnetic base, no Lightning cable, though, because it's meant to be used with Apple's official Lightning connector cable.
According to Strategy Analytics, iPhone users are less loyal than they used to be. Strategy Analytics found
traitors.
That only a measly 88% of U.S. iPhone users were likely to buy another Apple smartphone. That's down from 93% last year. In Western Europe, the delta is greater. Last year, 88% said they'd buy another iPhone. Now, it's 75%.
The Hollywood Reporter reports that CBS and Hulu have struck a non-exclusive multi-year content licensing deal that allows the Hulu Plus subscription service to stream programs from the CBS TV Library. Those are the older shows, not the newer shows. Series like Medium, Numbers, CSI Miami, Star Trek, I Love Lucy, and Twilight Zone will be available on Hulu Plus starting in January 2013.
The Telegraph reports that both Google and Microsoft have expressed an extreme interest in currently unused white space spectrum in the UK. This is according to a senior government source speaking to the publication. Right now, white space is allocated to broadcast services like TV and radio, but Ofcom has been looking to leverage the unused spectrum for rural broadband access. We don't know details of exactly what Google and Microsoft's interests are, but both could be going over the idea of getting into it.
Wall Street Journal reported yesterday that search customization seems to apply to only one presidential candidate. The journal searched topics like Iran and Medicare. Those who had already searched for Obama found the results customized in relation to the president, not always positively, mind you. No customizations related to Governor Romney. Google told the journal that the Obama customization is the result of more people searching for Obama and then on to one of the political topics in question.
Here's another chance for people to accuse Samsung of imitating another company. Australia-based Channel News reports Samsung has hired Scott Bedbury, a freelance brand consultant that helped Nike develop several projects to overhaul its corporate identity, including a new logo. Samsung plans to unveil its new corporate identity in January at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas.
I bet it's going to be like a peach with a bite taken out of it. What do you think?
No, maybe just that bite, that piece of it.
It's just a bite. It's not an apple. It's a crab apple.
Somebody somewhere, it's part of a religious organization, will not like the idea of that. A bitten peach.
Go with a vegetable.
As we all know, the forbidden fruit was a peach. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by GoToMeeting. Meetings are essential to the way we work. It's an opportunity to share ideas, problem solve, develop creative solutions. But if your team's spread out in different locations, it can be almost impossible to get your point across. That's why we love GoToMeeting with HD Faces. It's a powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate online. Share how GoToMeeting allows you to meet face-to-face, share your documents, collaborate, and see the expression on people's faces. So you can throw up a PowerPoint presentation, but you still see everybody's faces up at the top. And we do this all the time. You can start explaining things, and you can see people following along. You can see their expressions. You can see the understanding as you make your point. It's really helpful when you're doing remote meetings. So don't even take our word for it. GoToMeeting is available for free for 30 days. For this special offer, visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TNT. Remember, use that promo code TNT. GoToMeeting, meeting is believing, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to discuss the stories of the day and bring you some context is Sasha Segan, lead analyst of mobile at PCMag.com. Welcome back to the show, Sasha. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me. Look, we have electricity.
Yay! Yay! And you seem to be dry. And
seem to be.
Yeah, we finally came back over the weekend. The PC Mag offices, which are actually the same building as the CNET offices here in New York, were dark from Tuesday all the way through Saturday. But looks like everything's back up and running again.
Congratulations. I'm glad you weathered the storm well, and things are starting to get at least a little bit back to normal for you.
Thanks.
Let's start out talking about those Apple numbers and those IDC numbers about the tablet world. We got Sasha's all into mobile. He's got some good things to say about this, I'm sure.
Yeah, so you mentioned in the news views 3 million sold. And people go, well, that seems like a lot because some of the estimates we were hearing from analysts.
3 million. That's a very large number. But yeah, what does it mean?
Seems like a lot of tablets were moved. We were hearing between 1 and 1.5 million would be a nice, healthy, robust number for the Mini going into the weekend. So Apple says in an official notice, 3 million, we're very excited about it. You got quotes from Tim Cook saying, we're basically out of minis. Everybody's extremely excited with the demand. But this is for not only Mini, but also the fourth gen 10-inch iPad. Now, there was some confusion this morning as some people were writing this up saying, is this just all iPads? All iPads are counted in this 3 million number? No, it's really just the two new models, the Mini and the fourth gen. So I guess if you were even just to split them evenly, that's still about 1.5 million for the Mini, which is, by estimates, still very good. But we don't know exactly why Apple decided, hey, let's put all of these numbers together to make it look better rather than give us details on what exactly sold well and what may have not sold as well as they wanted it to.
So they're saying it's double what they had in March?
Yes,
but they've got two. But they've got two tablets
in opening weekend,
all right.
And they're also in more markets.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So that's
too.
Something to consider. I mean, the iPad Mini and the iPad 4th Gen are in 34 countries now. There'll be in others before the end of the year, including China. But this is not exactly a direct comparison. You can say, "Oh, that's great. You did sell more iPads in 3 days than you did back in March." But it is a totally different game now. I suspect that there's a little bit going on with Apple. Between them saying, well, 3 million just sounds good, and let's just keep it simple. And maybe a little bit more information on... See, I'm convinced that the iPad Mini, they're not breaking out that particular number because people still aren't convinced that it's the tablet for them. We hear a lot from people who have the Mini already who say, it's great, I love it. Oh, it's so light, it's I don't even mind the Retina. But I still think there are a lot more people who are waiting to see.
Sasha, what do you think of these numbers? Do they make sense to you?
Well, what I want to know is who's buying all those Samsung tablets?
With the IDC numbers, yeah, I know.
Yeah, one of the things that comes out in these numbers is they're all global numbers, and the difference between sales in different countries and different geographies is so dramatic. Like, take the Amazon Kindle Fire, for instance. The Kindle Fire is only available in a couple of countries. So if you look at those Kindle Fire numbers, their market share is going to be much higher in the U.S. than that global market share because their market share is zero in so many places. And I think we're seeing with Samsung, for instance, their market share is much higher in some countries that aren't the U.S. because here in the U.S., they're not selling so well. Where Apple triumphs, and one of the things Apple does so well that a lot of their competitors aren't doing yet, is they sell very evenly worldwide. Their competitors are very spotty, but Apple has really mastered this global geography to a way that some of the other tablet competitors haven't. But that said, this 7-inch to 8-inch space, it's just a lot more competitive. There were already some best-selling products there. It's just a lot harsher a market for Apple than the big tablets was.
It also seems like Apple's trying to manage expectations in general. After the last quarter, people were like, you're supposed to sell 17 million, and they only sold 14 million iPads. Mm-hmm. So to say that Apple says they sold 3 million, it just seems like, okay, well, this is how it's going to be from now on. We're not going to break out the numbers because I believe even Samsung stopped breaking out the numbers for their particular devices because it just sounds better to go, look, your expectations are here. We're going to match them by giving you vague numbers. And so now they're matched, okay? So let's have our stock price go back up because people were freaking out when the numbers didn't meet expectations.
Yeah, I've been expecting this kind of tablet market shift for a long time because for a while, Apple's iPad was really the only tablet like it out there. It certainly wasn't the first tablet ever, but it was the first tablet like it. So, of course, it was going to dominate for a long time. It has taken Android a little longer than I expected to catch up. But I think now we're going to see that same sort of thing where when you've got dozens of popular models running one operating system, it's going to dominate the marketplace. And we just saw that smartphones, now 75% Android. Sasha, I'm curious if you think that is mostly because Android is just on a lot of machines, or is Android legitimately becoming more popular than iOS? And do you think that could happen in tablet as well?
But those two things that you just said are basically the same. I mean, Android is more popular because it offers more options, because it's available at more price points and more form factors, on more carriers, in more distribution locations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Android's strength is that it can be everywhere. It's like the anonymous of OSs. Everyone is Android. Everything is Android. Anyway, Apple has never really chased market share as much as they've chased profitability. And one thing to watch out for is that Apple is looking to make a lot of money per phone rather than to sell a lot of phones for little money.
All right, let's move on to the Twitter copyright takedown change. Twitter legal policy manager Jeremy Kessel announced new DMCA policy in a post on Saturday. Twitter will withhold posts instead of removing them until, quote, such time as we get if we ever do a valid counter response from the user. They will put up a note that says, this tweet from the username has been withheld in response to a report from the copyright holder, along with a link to Twitter's copyright policy. Now, if you're watching the video, what you're seeing is not an example of that, because what happened was that, well, put it back up, Jason. Miko Hippinen of F-Secure made his own removal post and put it in his feed to show how easy it would be to fake that exact message. Now, what used to happen is Twitter would just take the post down, and then you would get a link not found, and you'd think, oh, I guess their user must have deleted the post. So what Twitter's trying to do is provide transparency and say, when a post is removed because of a DMCA request, we're going to redirect it to this notice. And if you'll go to the actual example of the withheld text, Jason, you'll see that this is the way it's going to look when Twitter actually puts it up. No, that's not it. It's the one that says actual example of withheld text.
Ah, there we go. Sorry.
There we go. So you can see it looks different than the one that Miko put up. This tweet from username has been withheld. And the learn more is actually linked instead of saying learn more and then a link after it. The idea is that they're also going to give these things to chillingeffects.org. And hopefully this sheds some light on the ridiculous number of DMCA requests they get. They say they've gotten over 4,000 this year. We've done stories before about how Google is flooded with DMCA takedown requests. And it also gives the user a chance to say, oh, one of my posts was actually taken down because of the DMCA. Maybe they missed the email or something. They can then file a counterclaim and possibly get it put back up.
It definitely seems like a good move because, you know, when you have these tweets disappearing, you don't have any record of this happening. And even like the at replies don't seem to be going anywhere. So if you have this kind of case and you're like, okay, well, we put up an episode of this show that gets taken down and that tweet's taken down, you don't have all those at replies to follow it. And to have this kind of thing that's always there as a record, at least you can find out what happened in the long term, especially if you file a counter notice and you win. At least that's still up instead of it being like this bizarre limbo space that happened before.
Right, you have sort of a placeholder because maybe it'll get reversed and it doesn't break all those conversations that you might have been having with other people, which is how Twitter works.
I think this is overall a great thing to say, like, this post wasn't just deleted because the user took it down or we're having a problem with our server. This post was removed for the DMCA. And that is something that the more transparency we get, the more we can just have an intelligent discussion about the effects of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. That's why chillingeffects.org exists, to shed light on this stuff. But Sasha, what do you think of Miko and others kind of pointing out, well, I could just make up a plausible looking post. Is it distinguishable enough?
Well, I mean, that's just Miko being cute. Miko's always been a prankster. He's a guy with a great sense of humor. He's a guy with a great sense of theatricality. It's just the kind of thing he would do. But, I mean, I don't know. I agree with you guys. It's good to have this out there because too much of this DMCA situation has been guilty until proven innocent. These big corporations can file these requests with their armies of lawyers. They kind of bully these companies and ISPs into if not submission, a little bit of intimidation, and the individual users are left as the ones who have to defend themselves. Well, at least this is Twitter saying, hey, it's not entirely a one-sided deal. Hey, there's something going on here. Why don't you check it out? So, yeah, I agree with Ayaz. It's a good scene.
Now, it's going to be lots of social networking news today. We got another Twitter story coming up. We also got a Facebook story because Ars Technica wrote a provocative article. Is Facebook broken on purpose?
Yeah, the idea is Facebook page owners have been complaining, and ours is actually one of these owners because they ran some of their own tests, that they are driving less traffic to their originating sites than ever via a promoted post on a Facebook page, let's say, even though the number of likes and fans are going up. What's the deal? Ours says, is it possibly because now we have an opportunity to pay in order to promote posts so that they go to the top of people's users' feeds because we feel like all of a sudden it's necessary? Facebook says, no, we are not doing anything different. What we're trying to do, what we've always tried to do, is show you the most relevant updates based on who your friends are, what your interests are, collective likes of certain posts, that sort of thing. And we're trying to keep user feeds from being too much of a promotion machine, because if there's that, then people just won't use Facebook in general. Facebook doesn't make money. But that's sort of the point here, right? Is Facebook can say, we're not doing anything to the algorithm to make it so that you have less folks clicking through, you know, where you're probably running your own ads on your own site. But we're also making money where we didn't just a year ago by this exact thing happening. You know, if Ars Technica says, you know, we really should have gotten 5,000 click-throughs in this amount of time, and we only have 500, well, they could pay 500, for example, to get that post seen by a lot more people. So Facebook denies all of this. They say this is just something that people think is going on, but it's not. But there are other examples. Ars Technica is not just one blog who says something seems off here. The blog Dangerous Mind says that page went from 29,000 to 53,000 Facebook likes, quite a bit more, and the traffic to its site kept dropping. Shared posts dropped to, at some points, two-thirds of what it had been in the past in that same period. So what's happening? A post at the New York Observer back in September reported that Facebook posts made from a brand's fan page, so this is could be like a, you know, like Macy's or a celebrity, are not even reaching that many of fans on average. When we're looking at maybe 15%. So is this just a case of more and more people in the world are on Facebook and it's noisier and you can't possibly be as loud as you were before? Or something that Facebook is doing so that they can make more money, which is of the essence to Facebook. No matter what they say, they do want to make as much money as possible.
We know from Google that tweaking algorithms is a constant battle, right? You don't just put out the algorithm and let it sit, because over time, behaviors change, conditions change, and you have to keep updating it and adapting it to those new conditions. So what could be going on here is a little bit of Facebook saying, you know, don't bother optimizing that algorithm quite yet. Let's let conditions change a little and see if maybe the fix to the algorithm isn't people buying promoted posts, because that would make us money. It's not as nefarious as them breaking the site on purpose,
yeah.
But it's sort of allowing the fix to be something that makes them money instead of the fix being something that they work on in an algorithm.
Yeah, when you said Google, I was already thinking about the same thing, that when you go to Google results, it's been weeded out so much that to the point where the promoted ones, the ones that you pay for, get on top, because that's what Google wants you to, that's what they want their advertisers to do. But they also want their search results to be something useful. Same thing with Facebook. If you have a ton of noise there and you're constantly seeing, okay, well, this is coming through and I'm seeing all these ads from Coca-Cola or whatever, you don't want to go back. So if I don't know if they're slowing down anything, nefariously. I just think it seems like it's this, they're basically against each other. They want to make sure people show up to Facebook, but how else can they show promoted posts other than charging? Because if they let it in with noise, they're not going to make any money, and then people won't use Facebook, and then they lose a lot more money. So I'm just thinking that it's more like Google, like you were saying.
Sasha, what do you think? Is Facebook just avoiding fixing things, or are they breaking stuff on purpose?
I'm having a real Cry Me a River feeling here, because Facebook's point, at least in my mind, Facebook's purpose is to connect people. It's to connect you to your friends and family and other individuals who are out there to have conversations. And, you know, no offense to this fine brand, but brands are not people. Macy's is not a person. Twit is not a person. Tom Merritt is a person. Ayaz Akhtar is a person. Twit is not a person. So
unless they're donating to campaigns, but that's a whole separate thing.
So the fact that these non-people are having harder times inserting themselves and overpowering the actual people in people's Facebook feeds, as I said, cry me a river. If people want to hear every message from a particular brand, well, sign up for their newsletter or subscribe to their feed on Twitter, where you do see everything. But if Facebook is prioritizing what your actual friends are saying, I just say, from a user's perspective, go Facebook.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank a new sponsor for Tech News Today. We're very happy to have Lantronics on board. Whether you're at home or at the office, printing from your iPhone can be a challenge. If your printer isn't AirPrint compatible, you're kind of out of luck. AirPrint is the service that iOS has, but it only works with printers that have AirPrint. I met the Lantronics guys, I think it was a Nerdtacular, and they told me they had a device that would turn any printer into an AirPrint-enabled printer. I was actually very skeptical, because if you've worked with printers at all, you know just how crappy networking and printers can be, how finicky they can be. I got the Lantronics box. They were nice guys. I'm like, of course I'm going to hook it up. I'm going to try it out. It was so simple. I plugged it into my Ethernet. It found the printer on my network. I went to my iOS device. I selected print. I printed it. It came right out of the printer. It was that easy. XPrint Server enables wireless printing from your iPad, your iPhone, your iPod Touch, and eliminates the need to print through apps, install software, or email your documents. All that hassle for printing is gone, and it works with USB or network printers you already own. It's either wired or wireless. Print directly from the iOS native menu. You don't have to install any apps. There's no software to load, and it supports more than 4,000 brand network computers, and as I said, just really easy to use. Great for your home or your office. If you want more information, go to xprintserver.com/twit. And we've got a special offer. As always, use the coupon code TWIT if you buy Lantronics and receive free shipping on your order. Remember, visit xprintserver.com/twit. And at checkout, enter the coupon code TWIT. We thank Lantronics for their support of Tech News Today. Twitter also ruined. Now, this isn't an official announcement like the DMCA, but it's a pretty credible rumor from the New York Times to be getting into competition with Instagram.
Yeah, photo filters. The New York Times was reporting that Twitter is going to add filters for photos in its mobile apps. They were citing some anonymous sources within Twitter, so it's not an official thing coming up yet. According to one of Twitter's employees, the company's very important tweeters, they call them VITs, internally, usually celebrities and media personalities would be happy to
see.
They
really call them VITs. I just
that's
that.
What the
I've
report
never heard
says.
That before.
I'm assuming that inside Twitter, all kinds of funny terms are thrown around. Not Muppets, but anyway, would be
that's better than Muppets.
The VITs would be especially happy to see filters in the Twitter mobile apps. And the New York Times said that Twitter was looking to purchase other Instagram competitors once the service was snapped up by Facebook. Decided building its own would be better. There was a one-liner in the story. Like, so all the story's about is these filters, and they're going to show up. They're going to maybe fight Instagram. This one-liner says, quote, Twitter is exploring adding other tools to its mobile applications, one employee said, including the ability to upload and possibly edit videos without having to go to a third-party application or service like YouTube. So apart from the Instagram thing happening, and we're talking about photo filters and Instagram killer or whatever, what about the idea of the video hosting feature and editing? Is that more of a play against YouTube? Because that just seems like a monstrously important line in this giant story about photo filters.
Well, you know, what about the whole acquisition of Vine, the app that never actually launched? But we know enough about it so that short bursts of videos that are supposed to, I guess, most of the time collectively tell a story. Hey, I was at a parade. Here's five short videos of the parade. That's... Even in that essence, and we don't know how that's going to change or be integrated into Twitter, that already is a type of editing video. It's a little clunky, at least from what I've seen of Vine so far. But Twitter is definitely interested in that sort of thing. The photo filters, to me, even though I don't think that this is a bad idea, I think that photo filters in general are just a nice option to have. If you're on the fly, you take a photo, it didn't come from somewhere else, you know, you just want to post it to Twitter. But it does seem a little bit like late and me too to me. I don't think there's anything too cool about it. All anyone's ever going to say is, oh, Twitter's just want to be Instagram. So it's, I guess, a little bit unfortunate.
Sasha, do you think that adding photo filters would be like an Instagram killer, or is it just another checkbox feature? Is this just something that every social network's going to have at this point?
God, I hate photo filters. God, every time I see a photo done with one of those Instagram filters, I think more poorly of the person who sent it to me. I hate photo filters. But I think what you said is... Oh, somebody's wrapping off the package. I think what you Thanks. Said is right, that it's the video hosting bit. That could be a bigger deal. But that said, Twitter would then need to find a way to index this media or make it searchable, because that's Twitter's Achilles heel as you move into a world where Twitter is really hosting media. Once you post stuff to Twitter, compared to YouTube, just stuff from the past is not easily searchable. It's not easily findable. You can't find related things. In terms of media, is it indexed at all? I was going to say it's poorly indexed. Is it indexed at all? So Twitter would need to change its entire UI to become a media hosting service as well as the tech service it is now. I mean, do you agree? Is there something I'm missing here?
Yeah, I don't see this as a competition for YouTube, per se. I see it as a competition for the kinds of things that Twitter's always in trouble for, the developers who've built on their platform, like TwitVid. What Twitter wants to do is fold everything into their app. So when you're using the Twitter app, you don't have to leave. You don't have to go to Instagram. You don't have to go to TwitVid. You don't have to go anywhere else. They just want it all to take place in the app so that people can, you know, if they take a video, they can just upload it with the Twitter app without using a third-party service. And maybe they can have some cool features like from Vine, or they can take a picture of clouds and then employ and put an annoying filter on it and annoy Sasha to no end by posting it to Twitter. But they don't want you to leave Twitter for any of that stuff.
But they don't. You don't really have to leave Twitter right now. You can say, I would like to look at this photo. Expand photo. It's a photo from another service. It's not Twitter's own service.
When you read, but what about when you upload?
Well, the other thing is...
Well, but that's the thing. Is like, okay, are they going to take away the ability for me to post an Instagram photo?
No, I don't think they take that away. They just make it so that if you're in Twitter and you want to take a photo, you don't leave Twitter to take that photo. I'm thinking of it more from the publishing side of things.
Yeah.
And once those things get, like, their Twitter basics or they're part of Twitter, then that all those Twitter APIs then apply again. So, like, can your data be moved out? Can you be able to do things with other apps to move your data out? This seems like once you start adding all these features to Twitter and the way Twitter's been locked down for developers and other apps... Seems like your stuff gets in Twitter. It's going to be very hard to get it out. Mm-hmm. So that's something I'm a little bit fearful of. Just also what Sarah's mentioned, they did buy a whole bunch of companies, including Posterous, which had a video upload feature, which I used to use all the time. So I'm kind of curious if they're just slowly figuring out what to do with all their acquisitions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or maybe even not that slowly. We just don't see it because, you know, they're going to unleash it all in a torrent of features or something. Ian Steadman of Wired UK has a story up today that's very interesting, getting a lot of attention. It was high on our subreddit about Trend Micro's report, Russian Underground 101. And it includes a shopping list of the kinds of things you can get in the Russian underground world for cyber criminals. You can get a botnet for $700. Whole botnet, barely used. Little old lady used to DDoS on Sundays. It's all yours for $700. You can rent for an hour at $2. Just rent a botnet for an hour. Spyware, Trojans. You want to find out what your friends have been emailing or your wife or your fiance. $350 for spyware Trojan. Or send 1 million spam emails for $10. That's £6.19 per 1 million emails. Russia has one of the most mature cybercrime markets, along with China and Brazil. In fact, Steadman calls Brazil the spiritual home of banking malware, but he puts it in quotes, so I think it may be a quote from Rick Ferguson of Trend Micro. The other interesting thing in this report are the trends. Fake antivirus and background web page codes are less popular. People have caught on to the fact that antivirus is fake, but browsers have patched their holes. What's on the rise? Ransomware, where they lock you out of your hard drive and make you pay to get your hard drive back. And the really nefarious thing about that is if you pay to get it back, you're then marked as somebody who, like, oh, this person pays, so you might want to go after them. There's a burgeoning market for mobile exploits as more and more people are using smartphones, as you would expect. Rick Ferguson is Trend Micro's Director of Security Research and Communications. He says, we've so far seen 175,000 malicious threats for Android, and we expect that to be 250,000 by next year. The whole point of this article is that the bad guys are using the same things that the good guys use: technology, market efficiency, driving down costs, and keeping things cheap.
I was looking at this article. That's what I was thinking about. The whole economic aspect of this, it's everything's gotten very cheap. But then I was like, what do you do with this? Either I can become an evil person and just pay a couple bucks and have all this stuff happen, or I got to really start taking security a lot more serious. I mean, in general, sure, we have, you know, lots of different passwords for things, and sure, we try to keep our things secure online. But knowing that these tools are available for anybody at such a low cost makes you get a little bit, like, I know, in my gut, I was a little bit nervous of, like, oh, man, if somebody wanted to get into my Facebook account or Twitter, it's really cheap. So I better steal up what I have going around, because these are the tools for the bad guys, and they're cheap.
Ransomware.
Yeah.
It's the worst thing ever.
Yeah, that is something we've talked about it on the show a few times, but it's really nasty. They were doing the pump and dump schemes with Windows. Ars Technica did a whole article mm-hmm. where they led someone on who was trying to get them to install a thing that would have created a ransomware situation where they would have had to pay them to get their data back. Sasha, does this stuff scare you, or is it just same old, same old?
I mean, I think it's definitely scary in the way it's accelerating, and in the way it's the the way it's evolving, and it's evolving quickly. One of the things that really strikes me here is this assumption or this treatment of Russia as this place with no laws, this complete anarchy. I mean, I just think if this is occurring in a country that has laws, why isn't the world community getting together to say, hey, Russia, if you don't crack down on this stuff, then we're not going to do business with you anymore. We're going to pull our internet companies out of your country. We're not going to support your networking equipment. We're going to not do business with bad actors. And I just don't see why the host country gets a pass for ignoring this, what's being called this burgeoning industry.
Yeah, and I don't know how much of a pass they really get. I mean, foreign relations are a complicated issue, and there's so many things besides just the technology that are involved with it that we don't have time to get into. But I definitely have heard a lot of people express exactly the same thing you're expressing, Sasha, that we need to crack down. We need to, or if not crack down, put pressure on Russia to fix a lot of this stuff. I think Russia would like to fix a lot of this stuff. At least they have expressed that on occasion. I think they're finding it hard to go after some of these people as well. So it's hard to say how much of it is corruption in the system and how much of it is just not having the ability to enforce the law the way that they should. Let's finish up with something happier. A birthday. Guess who's 5 years old today?
Android is 5 years old today.
Aww, wow, good guess.
This was one of the top stories on our Reddit, when I woke up this morning. And apparently you guys wanted to talk about it, so why not? We got Sasha on, so let's talk about Android. You know, 5 years ago today, November 5th, the newly formed Open Handset Alliance unveiled Android, an open source operating system for mobile phones. And now if you want to compare that to other phones, you know, the iPhone launched on June 29th. It was unveiled in January 9th, 2007. It's come a long way. There's a demo video showing off the old version of Android on a piece of hardware. The navigation is really BlackBerry-like. There's this little a D-pad, and you can select things from a dock. It looks like a BlackBerry, and in the video, you got Sergey Brin explaining
things.
That's
Sergey?
Yeah, he's out.
That was only 5 years ago?
Yeah, this is before he had Google glasses
on
all the time.
Oh, yeah, I didn't recognize him without the glasses.
Right. His voice is all squeaky.
He does look a lot younger than 5 years ago.
Well, it's like when you're a president, you age rapidly. When you're
yeah, right.
Research.
So he's aged a bit, but they're also showed a larger screen device navigated by a D-pad as well. That was back in 2007, and it wasn't until October of 2008 that we saw the G1. And Google did something brilliant in the beginning. They set aside $10 million for developers because they wanted applications. So this is a long time ago. So you know, in the 5 years, we've seen WebOS come and go. We've seen Windows Mobile get the boot for Windows Phone instead. Mobile Linux variants killed. Remember Mego, Moblin, and all those things? Sasha, I'm kind of curious. Do you think, are we ever going to see another disruptive mobile OS like Android again? Or are we just stuck in this two-horse race right now?
Okay, well, you're talking to the author of the infamous column where in April 2009, I think it was, I said, has Android already failed? Because at the time, all that was out were the G1 and I think its follow-up, the Magic. They weren't doing too well. A lot of companies had said that they were going to produce Android phones, but we hadn't really seen them and we hadn't seen solid plans. And yep, you got right there. And so that just shows how hard it is to predict these things well in advance. I mean, Android definitely had its supporters then, but people in general did not see the great heights it would rise to with the support of all the carriers and all the manufacturers. I mean, could somebody disrupt again? Of course someone can disrupt again. As soon as you start saying no one can disrupt, you are absolutely vulnerable to disruption. When has the technology market not been disruptable?
Yeah, I agree with Sasha. I mean, can someone disrupt again? Absolutely. And in fact, the more the market consolidates, I think the more chance there is of that. In fact, I think Windows Phone is sort of the next best candidate for being a popular OS because it's a well-designed operating system. It's got a lot of marketing push behind it. There's a lot of leverage being applied by Microsoft. And I think that will keep a lot of other people from entering this market right now because it's such a two-horse race. They're going to wait to see how Microsoft does with Windows Phone. If Windows Phone does not catch on, does not advance, I would think it would be more likely that someone else would give this a shot. But for a while, I think, you know, for the next foreseeable few years, we're probably looking at an Android-dominated universe with iOS as sort of the loyal opposition.
Sorry,
or maybe not so loyal.
Sarah, do you think it's going to be one of the old guard, you know, Microsoft, RIM, where these guys are going to come back? Or do you think it's going to take somebody brand new? Because when Google came in, they were new to the mobile operating system. That wasn't something they were known for. They were a search engine advertising company. They're fantastic at that. Mm-hmm. And here's an operating system, by the way. We happen to have one because there was that rumored G Phone. Do you think it's going to be?
Well, I don't think it's going to be RIM. I'll just go ahead and say that. I don't think RIM is going to. Windows Phone. I don't really feel confident that they're going to take that much market share from Android in the next year, but I still feel like it's so early. It's certainly impossible to count Microsoft out in this case. But yes, I think as far as innovation goes, hey, there was no Android 6 years ago, 5.5 years ago. It wasn't something that we could even really imagine. Obviously, people who were working on it could, yeah, and made it so. But that's just the way these things work. Yeah, there will be new technologies, new innovations that come out that have nothing to do with anything that we see now, and it probably won't take that long. Ask me again in 5 years.
All right. Put that on the calendar, somebody. We'll ask her on November 5th, 2017.
Yeah, because we'll all still be here.
You know what? And the thing is, somebody out there is like, I'm putting it in my calendar, right?
I'm going to get an email, and I thank you in advance.
Let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
This is a story that inspired the crap out of me today. 31-year-old Zach Vodder made history on Sunday by climbing the 103 flights of stairs in Chicago's Willis Tower. If you're like, what's the Willis Tower? Sears Tower. They just renamed it the Willis Tower. But it used to be, for many years, the tallest building in the world. It's still in the top 10. And this artificial limb works by targeting muscle re-innervation. It connects nerves in his part of his leg that hasn't been amputated to other viable muscles that would ordinarily control the missing lower leg. So there's a part of his hamstring that is connected, and when he activates that nerve, it sends signals into the robotic leg. So this isn't just a normal prosthetic that's stiff. He can walk upstairs like a normal person. He says it's kind of amazing. There's a great video from AP that shows it in action. And this was a little bit of a demonstration, a little bit of a PR stunt. But he climbed 103 flights of stairs with this robotic limb.
And it says in a quote, he can take 2 stairs at a time if he wants to. I mean, I feel incredibly lazy at this point. This guy's
doing
this.
Take 2 stairs at a time as well.
Yeah, I'm not going to take
103 flights.
103 flights. I don't even want to take 2 flights. Yeah. I mean, this guy is an inspiration, so that's good
to
know.
Yeah, really cool.
Got to work out today, I guess.
And as they point out in this article, or in the AP video, this is actually a very significant advance, because when you have a bionic arm, which I can't believe we're talking about bionic arms because it's like real things. But when you have a prosthetic robotic arm and you're holding a glass, if it fails, you drop the glass. It's not as nearly as devastating as if your robotic leg fails. You fall over. Mm-hmm. And if you're on stairs, you fall down the stairs.
Right.
There's a lot at risk there. Let's take a quick break and thank our last sponsor for today's show, Tech News Today, brought to you by Gazelle. If you want the new iPhone, before you get the new one, make sure you sell your used phone to Gazelle for cash that you can use to upgrade. Gazelle's simple and fast. Go to GAZELLE.com. Tell Gazelle the condition of your phone. They'll even buy broken iPhones for cash sometimes. Get a risk-free offer for your gadget and then lock that quote in for 30 days. That's the best part. It's risk-free. So once you get your new iPhone, then you ship your old one to Gazelle. They'll even pay for the shipping. You'll get paid fast by check or PayPal. So go to Gazelle.com right now. Get an offer for your old Android phone, your old iPhone, your laptop, your tablet, and do it today, because your iPhone's probably losing value every day rather than gaining value. You get paid in cash, and payment is fast within a few days of the item being received, and it's risk-free. Offers are good for 30 days, so why not go lock it in today? Gazelle.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. I believe, even though it's Monday, there are still things on the calendar.
That is correct. Someone has told you the truth. Halo 4 is hitting the Xbox 360 tomorrow, November 6th. Actually, comes out at midnight tonight, so it's sort of technically tonight, but later. U.S. Election Day is also tomorrow. You may have heard of this. Not many people care, but we do, and we're going to. We've made a nice little. I made
a display.
It's like a little particle board thing.
Yeah, it's like something I'd make for the county fair.
Because Tom Merritt is the kind of person who would have all of this on hand in a drawer somewhere.
I did.
That's just you, and that's great, and we love you for it. But we are going to be streaming live. Kind of come hang out with us while we all try to make sense of the election as numbers come in. We'll start at about 6 p.m. Pacific time here on Twit. And Samsung Galaxy Camera is coming to the UK. The release date is November 8th, so that is Thursday.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We've got an email from Steven. He says, hello, TNT folks. I was listening to your Friday episode where you were discussing the Google Wallet feature of a physical card, and I was struck by how this sounds exactly like PayPal's debit MasterCard or their new PayPal purchase in-store system. First, this debit MasterCard is connected to your PayPal account, and you can choose to either have purchases come out of your PayPal balance, or you can connect a checking or credit card account to it. There's also the option of setting a PIN so you can get your PayPal balance out as cash at an ATM, or you can use the card as a debit card and get cash back. The second and newer way to pay with PayPal in person is this purchase in-store program. At select stores on the payment pad at the register, you'll tap PayPal and enter your mobile number and a PIN. Just like the MasterCard, you choose which place the money comes from. The only way I can see that Google Wallet is different is it allows you to change the payment source via mobile app. I'm not sure if PayPal's mobile app allows this, but the mobile website does. Well, that's a great point, Stephen. I completely forgot. I use a PayPal debit card all the time.
Oh, you do?
And I completely forgot that this exists.
Sasha, what was your take on that Google Wallet physical card? Did you hear about that?
No, I hadn't heard about that one. I've been neck deep in phones and tablets and hurricanes for the past week.
Essentially, it's a card, and apparently PayPal does the same thing that you can link to your Google Wallet, like, and then you can change the Google Wallet accounts that's linked to.
It's like the Google Voice for your credit cards.
Yeah.
Got another email from Eddie. He says, on the Friday show last Friday, Tom commented that the reason the Nexus 4 didn't have LTE was because it was a mid-range phone. My belief is Google chose not to include LTE on the Nexus 4 to ensure it could remain unlocked and thereby be maintained by Google. The Verizon Galaxy Nexus seemed to be the catalyst for this decision. Both Sprint and Verizon Nexus owners had to wait 4 to 5 months to see that Jelly Bean update, while their GSM counterparts received them the week it was released. What differentiates a Nexus device from every other Android device is the support and maintenance directly from Google. Since there's no way to sell an unlocked CDMA device, Google can't provide the product support a Nexus device demands. Also, if the CDMA problem was solved, Google would still have to design 3 separate devices, one for each carrier with no carrier support or advertising, or one device with 10 radios. The Nexus 4 is actually the Optimus G unlocked with a pure unskinned version of 4.2 Jelly Bean with a different body. The specs are exactly the same as the AT&T version, which is LG's flagship device. And then he says, I'm sorry for the rambling email, but I just wanted to ensure you knew the backstory of the last time Google released an LTE Nexus.
Now, I call Nexus 4 a mid-range phone. We talked about this after the show because it doesn't have LTE. But maybe that's a misnomer. I mean, Sasha, what would you call the Nexus 4?
I would call the Nexus 4 the latest Nexus. What you have to understand about the LTE situation is that, okay, so first of all, the U.S. is the only country where LTE is built out as much as it is here. And DCHSPA, which is HSPA 42, is of growing popularity across the world, and it is about as fast as a lot of early LTE builds. So you're getting performance on HSPA 42 that is similar to performance on early LTE networks. Okay. So across the globe, this Nexus 4 has great performance on HSPA 42, no LTE needed. Okay, so let's look in the U.S. Well, the only carrier that has really expressed enthusiasm about unlocked phones and the only carrier that has expressed a desire to let Google do what it really wants to do is T-Mobile. AT&T, Sprint, Verizon, they all want to exert various levels of control over the phone experience. T-Mobile's willing to say to Google, okay, let's let it be a Google phone. And remember, T-Mobile had the G1. T-Mobile had the G2. T-Mobile doesn't have LTE. T-Mobile has HSPA 42 in line with all of those other global carriers. So Google said, this is fine.
will target T-Mobile in the U.S., will target all these HSPA-42 carriers across the world. We don't need to get involved in this whole multi-band need authentication. Oh, maybe there's CDMA, LTE mess, especially considering what a total dog's breakfast that Verizon Galaxy Nexus disaster. Yep.
Absolutely. If Google's trying to stay close and be considerate of their kind of desires for the Nexus program, then going onto the LTE band really doesn't make a whole lot of sense because they lose all of the control. That is one of the big selling points of the Galaxy Nexus, the fact that Google has that direct line to it. When you lose that, it's not really a Nexus. And that's how I feel about my Galaxy Nexus on Verizon.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for us today. Thanks to everybody who submitted stories at our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. Helps us figure out what stories we want to include every day in the show. And Sasha Segan, thank you. Always great to have your insight and expertise, especially on the mobile world, but just technology in general. Let folks know where they can find you at PC Mag and what you're working on and anything else you want to tell them about.
Well, I'm here at PCMag.com catching up on all the stuff that got held up because of the hurricane. So I've got an iPad mini here. I've got the new iPad. I've got the Nexus 10. We've got the Nexus 4. And we're just going to be knocking them out throughout the week. Also look for some Windows Phone reviews. So there's a lot of hot products, and you'll see them coming up on PCMag.com throughout the week.
All right. Check it out, folks. PCMag.com. And glad you're dry and safe and back at it.
Thanks a lot.
That's it for this show. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, and give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back at it tomorrow with Father Robert Ballesterra as our guest. We'll see you then.